This is P.S. You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt, and everything's fine and normal, and nobody's crying on air.
I instantly regretted not recording this episode on Monday. This was my fault for not watching these freaking Agatha All Along episodes early enough, and instead I, you know, got to watch the finale last night, mid-election result.
The finale of America as we know it? Or
well, yes. And Agatha. The finale of a lot of things.
Yeah,
I was like, where can I get one of those towers with all the dangly swords hanging on it? I would love to do a little tower reverse and send some people the spiky demises. But
yeah. Julia had the right idea. She said, enough is enough. I've lived a good life.
Patty LuPone always has the right idea. Like, that's the thing. You live long enough and you just sort of know that there are certain people who are just onto something, and Patty LuPone is one of them. Like, shouting at theatergoers for being on their cell phone, her, like, in a feud with Andrew Lloyd Webber, like, just an icon in every sense of the word.
And truly. But yeah, we won't be talking about the election, not because we don't care or because we're happy, but in fact because we'll fall apart. And we're here to talk about something that matters so much more. Agatha All Along from Disney Plus.
Yes, I've been like weepy all day today.
We'll just pretend it's because of the speech. No, my love. No. Sometimes boys just die. That's what it is. No, but Agatha All Along. I'm excited to talk about this. I really am, because I very much enjoyed this show. It's the follow-up to WandaVision, which was Disney Plus's first Marvel show. And they peaked. They peaked early. They peaked early. They peaked fast. They peaked hard. It was such a fun show. WandaVision was a delight. Marvel has since had nothing but duds, IMHO. And so people had known Agatha All Along was coming. It had been announced pretty shortly after WandaVision ended. And we even knew part of the cast, I think, earlier this year, all of the news, blah, blah, blah. But it wasn't really something I was necessarily like stoked about. Like, I feel like I would watch it, but it wasn't like I had high hopes for it, especially after like, I don't even remember the last Marvel TV show I watched.
I'm like, let me pull up the list of Marvel TV shows.
I'm like, I did see Deadpool, the movie. That's the last Marvel project.
I'm like, I don't think that counts.
Doctor Strange sucked. I don't remember if they did a show after Captain America. They must have.
I'm like, where even are they? Loki. Okay, here we go. Okay, so far we've had WandaVision, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Loki, What If, which was that cartoon show, Hawkeye, Moon Knight, Ms. Marvel, She-Hulk, Attorney at Law, Secret Invasion, Loki Season 2, What If Season 2,
okay, so there was a Loki
that I've never heard of.
Loki,
but there hasn't been a new Marvel show since like this year.
Right.
The last one was Echo, whatever the F that is.
Echo.
It aired in January?
Echo. Was it animated or something?
It's a spinoff of Hawkeye? It stars Maya Lopez. Who is that?
It must be animated.
Is it animated? It's 5 episodes? I'm like,
I don't know anything about this.
I've never heard of this. And then before that, it was Loki, the second season of Loki.
That's right. Anyways, Marvel Cinematic Universe has been in a rut. Okay. They've really cracked open a messy shell with this whole multiverse thing. But I've got to say, Agatha All Along, that was a good show. That was a good show. What did you think?
Yes, I quite enjoyed it. I really liked WandaVision. This is from the same creator, Jack Schaefer. Or Jace Schaefer? I don't know. It's a woman. J-A-C. I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce that. Jackie something? Anyways. Yeah, and I honestly had forgotten most of what happened in WandaVision and forgot what had happened to Wanda post-WandaVision in the Doctor Strange movie. But I feel like they sort of, you didn't really need to know that much, and they kind of caught you up on the stuff that was relevant in any way, shape, or form. Yeah, I enjoyed this. It zipped along really quickly. One thing I do appreciate about the Marvel shows is that they're all pretty short. Like, the episodes are, they're like listed as like 40, 50 minutes, but then you realize that actually like 3 minutes of that is a previously on and like 5 minutes of that is the closing credits. And so the episodes are all like a half hour-ish, I think, for the most part. And yeah, this was like 9 episodes. It breezed by. It was a pretty quick binge, and it sort of, I thought, yeah, initially I was a little bit skeptical because I thought it was kind of going in a sort of boring direction. And then it really does some interesting things to turn stuff on its head and make some clever moves in the back half that I quite liked. And, and sort of the way that it's set up is that there, you know, each character kind of gets their own episode in some ways. And I think Patti LuPone's episode, which is episode 7, is like super, super strong. So yeah, there was a lot of good stuff going on in this. I did enjoy it a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Yeah, namely number one, Katherine Hahn. I mean,
well, the cast just in general. Like Katherine Hahn, Joe Locke from Heartstopper, Aubrey Plaza, Sasheer Zamata, who I have not seen in forever after she was on SNL, Patti LuPone, obviously, like just a really stellar group.
Yeah. And they all seem to be having a delightful time. I mean, Katherine Hahn, you know what line stuck in my head the most?
Okay.
Is when she makes so many fun choices in this, because the whole premise is the first episode is played like a mayor of Easttown, like murder mystery cop has to solve this dead body situation. And then you find out at the very end that she's been stuck in this sort of like mind melt to just like keep her safe in the city of Westville after wreaking havoc during WandaVision's stint as mayor of whatever. And so anyways, you realize very quickly that whole thing was like a fever dream where she was just like driving in a pretend car in her house and like running around the neighborhood, just poking at people who are like just going along with her Minty B, which I really appreciated. And, but anyways, my favorite line reading of hers is when she's interviewing or she's, questioning the teen, and she's like writing down her notes and she goes, "Total loser or totally lying."
Well, she does have like she's co-opted some sort of weird Boston accent for that whole section. Yeah. And I did think it worked really well with the WandaVision of it all, which obviously started with the, you know, sort of different sitcom tropes. And then you realize that it's something deeper is going on. So I like that we started with this crime series and then moved into other stuff as it went. But it also didn't feel like just a gimmick. Like it felt like it was purposeful, and it went on for just the appropriate amount of time, which is like one episode. Katherine Hahn, get like the all of her choices were great.
Yeah, because then you get like an episode 5 or 6, you get the POV from the teen, so you get the whole thing over again, but from his perspective, and so you see how like cuckoo bananas she looks because she doesn't have a gun. She has like a I don't know, remote control, and she doesn't have a, you know, precinct. She has her living room. And I think it was, that's what ended up being my favorite part of the series, is just the attention to detail. And even when it wouldn't pay off until you think about it again at the end. And so like every little facial expression, intonation, like every weird little choice, I think it all added to the character and then the payoff of the whole series, which you don't see a lot, because when you're halfway through the show, you're like, are these people overacting? Like, what's the vibe here? Like, everything's a little cheap looking, which is also because this is the cheapest show they've ever produced. And it starts to feel kind of like, okay, Agatha is sort of an unbelievable character. Like, she's just so over the top and she's so like unreliable that you're kind of like, okay, is this overacting or is she embodying someone who's overacting for a purpose? You know what I mean? And so I think that was the delight of the show, is that it all ended up paying off in an interesting way. And I think Catherine Hahn was the perfect actress to pull that off, because she's such a fun character actress and she's not afraid to be loud and big, but it never comes off as like, I don't know, parody or some sort of SNL skit.
Well, she's such a talented actress in that she can be so funny, but then she can also do these serious scenes so well, and she can kind of slide back and forth between those two modes in a way that I think a lot of actors can't. And yeah, she's just so watchable, and every choice she makes is interesting. Like, just like the way she's sitting, things she's holding, things she's doing with her hand or her hair.
Pardon?
Yeah, she's so great. And they clearly, the director, just kind of let her go and do what she wanted to, which I think really worked. Because, yeah, she's in this, like, true crime, like Mayor of Easttown kind of HBO-style doc at the beginning. And then in the second episode, she's finds out that she's being chased by these seven evil witches. And she, in order to sort of escape them, she has to go down the witches' road, which requires getting a coven of witches together. And that, so she sort of recruits these misfit ragtag group of people to form this coven. And then they do this ritual, which involves this song that's really good that they keep singing and over again. And which I've listened to like 100 times now on Spotify.
Yes.
And so through this ritual, they end up on the Witch's Road. And then the next group of episodes that proceeds are like these tasks, because supposedly each person on the Witch's Road has to do a task. And so you get them kind of one by one as they're unfolding. And that's the majority of the season, are them trying to take these on sort of one by one until you get to the end. And then the last two episodes are kind of the climax.
Yes, because in WandaVision, Agatha Harkness is like this master witch who has the Darkhold, which is basically where she can have unlimited power, because if you attack her, she absorbs it and like gets your power too. But Wanda neutered her and like took that away and then locked her in this like mental prison. But when Wanda died, the implication is that freed Agatha, but Agatha doesn't have her powers yet. So she decides she wants to go on the witch's road to get her powers back, because she's also being chased by her evil ex-girlfriend, Miss Aubrey Plaza, who wants to kill her, but wants it to be a fair fight. So she's like, okay, I'll give you time. You go get your powers, and then I'm coming for blood, because you deserve it. And so the whole thing is Agatha very selfishly just wants her powers back. She does not care about this coven at all. She does not care about the teen who's come to pull it together. Like, she's just trying to get her powers back. And there's not really clear motivations why. I mean, why she cares so much, except that she's this evil, infamous witch who's only ever known power since murdering her own coven and her own mother in the 1600s in Salem. But should we talk about the twist so that we can enjoy the discourse of all the episodes?
Sure. Now? Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Well, I guess before we do that, before we get to the twist, I do want to say, So I liked the setup of the first couple episodes. And then we started getting into these trials. Mm-hmm. And I was like, these trials, like, don't really sort of make sense. They're kind of weird. I'm confused as to what they're actually, like, what they're actually testing. Because each of the witches in a coven is supposedly a different type of witch. And so they kind of get to a trial, and the trial is potions or whatever. And so then the potions witch has to do something. And I was like, these are all kind of hokey, and they just felt a little bit off to me in some way. And I thought, if this whole show is going to be just like them doing these different trials and then eventually at the end getting to, you know, the end of the road and her getting her powers back or whatever, this is going to be sort of a boring show. And I kept thinking about The Mandalorian, which is, you know, on the Star Wars side of things, but how that show and also the Book of Boba Fett are like a adventure a week kind of thing. So the season does have some sort of arc where, okay, we have to go here, we have to save this person. But then in between, basically every episode is sort of like, okay, here's this week's adventure. Yay, we beat it. Now on to next week's. And I was like, oh, if this is the model that we're using for this Agatha show, it's going to be annoying I feel like kind of boring after a while. Like, I can't watch them do 8 different trials. But then you get the twist at the end, and I think it really like transforms the way you think about all of these episodes.
Yeah, because there's basically a two-parter where there's this teen who kind of pops up, but no one knows who he is because there's some sort of spell on him where anytime he talks about himself or what he cares about, it like blurs out. So they don't know his name. They don't know what he's doing there, but he's this tag along wannabe witch who's like on the road to the witch's road for his own goal. And him and Agatha start to have this like little bond where she's sort of like, okay, you're like my little pet, like whatever, come along for the heck of it. But then, you have these other witches who are kind of like has-beens for whatever reason, or sort of non-believers.
One of them's not even a witch.
Yeah.
Just like a random neighbor lady they pull out of nowhere. The implication
was, she has a little bit in her or something. Yeah. But it never been explored. She was the repeat from WandaVision. Little neighbor old lady. And I think you're right, where a lot of the first half feels kind of like, okay, these are like cheap jump scares. Like, it's not meant to be scary, but there's just a lot of like, ooh, spooky, but you're not sure what. But so the first twist comes halfway through the road after,
let's just go in order. I'm like, I don't
I know, but I just like am obsessed with how detailed the premise was. But if we're doing a recap, I guess we can just...
Well, I mean, people should watch it. I don't know. Like, because it's like the twist sort of unfolds, though, in a couple of different levels. Because first Agatha, you get the... Because you don't know who this teen is, who Joe Locke's character is. And at first, it seems to be pointing to him being perhaps like some version of Agatha's child that she killed or somehow is connected to or is reincarnated or something. And that maybe she is kind of going on this journey and is connecting with him in this way because he's her kid secretly. And obviously, you know, he's related to somebody or has some sort of importance. And then you realize in the Patti LuPone episode, oh no, wait, he's actually...
No, you realize before that.
Oh, was that?
Or maybe it's during it.
Well, at some point you realize, oh no, he's actually one of WandaVision's children. And that.
Oh, yeah.
And then in the Patti LuPone episode, sort of, you see that when he, like when the WandaVision sort of thing exploded and her children died, one of their, schools or whatever got transported into Joe Locke's character, who was just this random like kid who was like this Jewish boy who lived outside of the area where the dome was. And so that he now has these magical powers, he can read minds, and that he is trying to figure out where the spirit of his twin brother is so that he can somehow bring the twin back to life.
Well, first, because he has his own episode. And so first he's just confused and he doesn't fully understand how he is what he is. And then he starts to put together the WandaVision hush story that was told about Westview by the government. So there's like a lot of cutesy little tie-ins.
Right.
But yes, generally, he then decides he's a witch and he's Wanda's kid and he wants to find the road to then find his brother, who he feels like he must have been feeling his whole these last few years. And so that's what leads him to Agatha. And then with Agatha, he's like, let's do the road. And she's like, no, but then maybe I will, because then I'll get my powers back. So it's a real meeting of the minds there, and purpose-led teamwork. So they decide to walk the road together. And then you realize, as Agatha realizes, that, oh, wait, he's actually Wanda's child. And I think he has a technical like superhero name from the comics, but like whatever, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm like
Billy Maximoff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then at the end of episode 8, which is like the big sort of twisty twist, is that you realize that,
well, no, because then there's other twists too. Cuz you find out Rio, who's Aubrey Plaza, is actually Death. And so,
right, but I'm just trying to get to the big twist so that we can go back to the episode 3 or whatever and actually go through these trials.
Okay.
Because the big twist is that there is actually no such thing as the Witch's Road. That this was a story that Agatha made up to try to like coerce these witches throughout history to attack her so that she could steal all of their power. But that Billy, the teen, sort of created this witch's road out of his mind and his powers for these women to go on, and that it's all based on like things in his room and in his life. So when Agatha finally like sees his room, she's like, wait a second, like this is actually based on
Agatha knew, because Agatha's the only witch who knows that the road does not exist. So
confused the whole time, sort of, as to what was
happening. I don't think she was confused. I think she knew who he was, or guessed who he was, and was like, well, I guess we're in this. Because that's what was so fun about like rewatching clips, is like you're watching her process that she's stuck in this kid's uncontrolled vision, and she's unsure about how to react to certain things, or like how far he can take it when he's not even aware he's casting it. And that's even true in like the first singing of the song, where she's like trying to goad these witches into attacking her in the way they have throughout history. And then they're like, what is this? And she realizes a road's appeared.
Right.
And the kid comes running down the stairs and is like, let's go. And she's like, okay, strange. And so then the episodes are just like a very fascinating rewatch, because they're just like so many little minutiae to her reactions and her constantly watching him or winking at him or having these sort of asides to him where it's like, well, didn't you think this she would die? Like, how did you not know, type thing, which only makes sense on a rewatch where you're like, oh, she knows that he's doing this, even though he doesn't know that he's doing it yet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there's a lot. It's a lot going on. But I was sort of curious. I was like, of all the ways to goad these other witches into attacking her, I'm like, this method, like, not in the immediate, like, events, but in like the flashbacks where, you know, she's like getting the medieval witches or whatever to attack her, I'm like, this seems like a very bizarre option to go with, of like, oh, I'm gonna convince them to be in a coven, and then we're gonna sing this song, and then they're gonna be mad that I said that they're not strong enough witches in order to cause the coven, and so then they're gonna attack me. I'm like, there has to be an easier, more straightforward way than this. Like, it worked great for the plot of this show, but I was like, this is bizarre to me. Like, that was the one part in this sort of going back where I was like, what? Like, this.
Well, I do think it has like, more why? To do with the circumstances around how she became who she was, because that's like the whole other final arc of the story is Agatha's like personal background in having this child with Death. And Death is like, hey, yeah, so this is against the order of things and I have to take this. You can't have him. Like, he has to come with me, aka he has to die. And she's like, no, 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 please don't. Like, please, my love, don't. And so Death gives her time with the kid. And so the kid becomes like her bond and they're the ones who sort of pen this little ditty. And so when he is eventually taken by Death and dies and she's left alone, like her singular tiny morsel of moral compass is gone and all she has is this legacy he's accidentally left, which is these witches thinking the song is true. And so I think she just takes sick pleasure in like that proximity to what her and her son had, which is the witch's road. And so then, yeah, I think it's like, you know, could she do it more effectively? Yeah, but there's probably some sick, you know, closure or vindication in doing it that way over and over again through the centuries.
Do we know how she met Death in the first place?
No, which is like, oh my gosh, right?
By that as well. Like, there was, I do think if I watch this a second time, like, everything would sort of click into place and make more sense for me. It was a little bit, there is, like, a lot of stuff going on and a lot of, like, time jumping and who knows what and who has what magical power. And
yeah.
And I do, like, and I do feel like the some of the rules were sort of confusing, and then you get to these trials and you're sort of like, okay, wait, what's this person like? Oh, they're a
protection. Well, that's what's funny. That's what's funny, because it's just made up by a teenager's brain.
No, which makes sense when you're watching it back. Yes, but it is like trying to keep track of all of this as it's going and then sort of recalibrate things as you get new information, I did think was tricky, especially once you get to the end. And it's like, okay, what, he's a Wanda's son, and then and Death knew this, and the Wanda knew that, and Patti LuPone's character is jumping through time because she's living non-linearly, and it's all based on a board game. Like, there was just a lot of pieces, which I did think was really fun and very interesting, and it made for an entertaining, engrossing watch. But I do think that there are certain details where I'm kind of like, huh. And then I don't know if it all necessarily like works or not 100%, because I would need to watch it all through again, which I probably won't be doing. So
I appreciate the honesty, but I think I agree. I mean, I think I like this style of show where it doesn't answer everything. Like, I've been used to that since My Love of Lost type thing. Mm-hmm. So I don't need to know. Like, I like having the mystery of how Agatha and Rio met and how they conceived a child and whatever. But I did like that tension between them felt real, and there was a history that felt like it existed between them, even if we didn't know every detail. And I mean, that's the love of like any story, is being able to imagine beyond what you've been given. And so I already know there's just has to be a ton of fanfics about them. And like, you know, who knows if we'll ever get a spinoff of Rio and Agatha, but they clearly had like a lot of fun giving us that morsel. And it's such a cool idea of this witch, this dark witch falling in love with Death itself, and Death loving her back because she's the gift that keeps on giving, you know? But then also allowing Death to be more than just, like, they make a point to say that Rio's not just, you know, the end of life, but the circle of life. And so it's the death and the new beginnings and the coming again. And so she's like a green witch, which is the witch that can grow things. And so I think there was a lot of like layers that I enjoy having, even if I don't do a full rewatch. Like, it just felt like the creators cared so much about crafting this narrative that I respect like the effort put into it, and I trust that they thought of as much as they could. Like, any hang up I have, I'm like, well, they probably have a Like it's easy to feel like there's something they thought of that they just didn't put in the show, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's just the cast and the characters are so enjoyable.
Yeah.
Because they really did line up these witches, I think, in a way where they all have very unique personalities and distinct personalities, and they're all sort of interesting. And the way that they interact with each other is really interesting, and the dynamics. And I think there's a lot of payoff in those moments. And then also, I think it's obviously supposed to look kind of cheapy because it's okay, it's in this boy's mind. So like there's sections where it's like obviously there's a sheet kind of backdrop that someone's coming out of, or it's not like a super well done, you know, high def green screen or shot on location. Like it's very clearly a soundstage for a lot of these. But then at the same time, each of these trials is in a different house. And when they go in the house, they're all given new sort of costumes or personas that connect to that era. So there's like an 80s sleepover. There's like a sort of Nancy Myers kitchen, like fancy Malibu house kind of thing. And I thought that that was really fun and gave them a lot to play with. And also, you know, so many series, I think especially series that are geared more towards children or families, don't like to deal with death or killing people or killing people off. And this show, I think they kept killing characters, and I kept thinking, oh, well, like they have to bring them back, or this person can't possibly be dead. Like they have to come back to life. And they really didn't. Like, the most of the cast is dead by the end of the series, which I think is sort of refreshing in an interesting way.
Yeah. And watching this live, it was interesting because obviously there were a lot of theories around like who Agatha is and what her motivation is. And the show very quickly starts to pull tension from this idea that she's just evil. Like the way people talk about her, like, oh, she sacrificed her son for the Book of the Dead. Like, oh, she slaughters witches. Like, oh, like death. Rio's character is like, why do you let them believe these things about you? And she's like, the truth is just so much worse. And so you're kind of left to wonder, like, oh, is everything that's said about her like just a rumor that's gotten wild and she's actually a good witch, or like has she really killed people, or is she just like stuck in this like blah blah blah? There was like, a lot of theories around it. Is this going to be a
Maleficent kind of a
situation? Yeah, like, oh, is she a good? Yeah, and I actually really like that they stuck to the fact that she is a bad person. Like she fully killed a ton of witches for her own selfish reasons. It wasn't like, yes, you could argue that at the end she was probably, like, the theory is that she was killing all those witches with her son to stave off death from taking him. But that's still not a good reason to murder, you know, 5 women a day for 6 years or whatever. So I liked that they let her still be bad. And I liked that the answer wasn't to make Billy like the pure angelic form of an angel, like form of a witch, but instead complicated him too, where he's this teenage boy who has to grapple with the reality that, holy shit, I just made this with my mind and it actually killed people. And like, he has to accept that, okay, life isn't as black and white as I would have assumed. And there isn't like good and evil. There's all of that capacity in each of us. And so he's like, his journey of balancing that selfishness with this idea of being a good person, yet wanting his brother, comes to a head in the end where he's like looking for his brother's spirit. But in order to get his spirit to be, you know, tangible, he has to find a body. Like, just like he stole a body, he now has to do that for his brother. And yet he's like, am I the one killing this kid now to give my brother a body? Like, I think that's such a unique and interesting and mature sort of question to wrestle with in a family-friendly show. And I appreciated that they had the balls to stick to it. And I think that's what is refreshing about this creator, and similar to WandaVision, is that, you know, she seems to stick to her guns in ways that you don't always see Marvel ventures get to do. Like, obviously, this is a very sapphic story in that there's the implications. There is kissing between Rio and Agatha, but there's also just the sexual tension throughout. And then you also have the boy who has his little boyfriend too. And so I admired that they pulled through on that, because it seems harder and harder to do these days at Disney. And I think it added to sort of this complex and interesting character study that wasn't afraid of asking the big questions.
Yeah, no, that was, it was really nice in that regard. And I think that just, we've had so many Marvel movies and TV shows at this point, and I think the ones that do the best are really the ones that are sort of the most separate from the Marvel universe in general, and then also make the biggest swings in doing something different. And obviously this is a superhero show in some capacity, but it really doesn't feel like it. And I think that the best parts of it don't really require the superpowers as much. Like, it's not like there's really big fights or anything that are sort of like superpower related. Yeah. Because through the whole first bunch of episodes, you sort of think, oh, like the finale is going to be that Wanda has to fight off these Salem Seven, who are the daughters of witches that she's killed in the past. But then they're sort of dispatched with pretty easily by Patti LuPone's character. And that has nothing to do with the finale. And you really never get to see a big fight between all of them. And when you do get to the big sort of climactic scene between Aubrey Plaza and Catherine Hahn, it's not like a fight. It's a, you know, it's more like an ultimatum kind of thing. Or a choice that has to be made. And I think that that was all just so smartly configured. And it has the feeling of the Prestige or Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, where there's like a time travel-y kind of aspect to it, but it all like fits together.
Yeah.
Where you're going back and you're revisiting stuff and it's like, oh, this really works. I guess that Avengers Endgame does this too pretty well. But just the whole thing clicked in a way that was super satisfying.
Yeah.
And I felt like had a lot of emotional payoff too, because you do feel for these different characters and the journeys that they're going on. I wonder
and
if
I
we'll
liked
get...
like the teen is always the one to find the clues, and he's always the one to like tell him like, oh, this is what we have to do. And so there's like a real care to making the machinations make sense, even as Agatha is also trying to like help him write it, so to speak. And yet even in this like, you know, cruel abuse of power, just like his mother did to the community of Westview or whatever, he's still giving them a chance to like get what they want from the road, which for one of them is like ending the curse and like, and what was her thing? She's like a sacrificial, she's a giver or like a saver.
Which character are you talking to?
The Asian.
Protector?
The protector, yeah.
And she died protecting somebody. Yeah. So it's like, so she, yeah, got what she wanted.
Yeah.
And then
Lilia, Patti LuPone learns to like understand her life and embrace like, oh, I loved being a witch after all. And that was really sweet.
I actually just have to talk about that episode for a second because I feel like that is such a good episode. Like, I'm like, give Patti LuPone a Emmy Award for this. Like absolutely iconic. So she is a divination witch. So she can like see the future, and she reads like tarot cards and tea leaves or whatever. But you realize in her episode that part of the reason why she can do that is because she's sort of like untethered from time. She like jumps back and forth. Especially when she was younger. And then, you know, sort of now that she's reaching the end of her life, she's doing that again. And so the whole episode is told like non-linearly, in that it's jumping back and forth as she is jumping back and forth through time. So there's this challenge or the trial that where she has to do this tarot card reading, but then at the same time you're seeing her throughout her entire life and throughout these different interactions on the road and her interactions with the women who have already died and with the women who are left and the things in the future. And the way that it all syncs up, just like, it reminded me a lot of The Constant, the episode in Lost that's like a time travel-y episode that has such a good payoff too. And just like when, by the time you get to the end and she sort of realizes what's happening and she realizes what she has to do and she like executes this tarot card reading, it, the whole thing just works so perfectly. And she has this like friendship with Sashir Zameda's character and that kind of just ties in perfectly at the end. And it's just such a good bottle episode, I think, in that it really is focused on her. It's a massive showcase. It's unlike any of the other episodes because of the time jumping, and it,
and they're all wicked characters.
And it just, or they're all they're all like famous witches. All dressed as famous witches. So she's dressed like who, like Elphaba, or I mean, no, not Elphaba, she's Glinda. Is she Glinda? I couldn't tell if she was Glinda or if she was some sort of like weird like Elsa kind of thing from Frozen.
No, she had like the pink, she had like the classic like Wizard of Oz hat. Yeah, but she kind of looked
icy. Like her... There was definitely some like copyright something going on.
I was like, wait, because, who owns Wicked?
Well, because the... because Sashir Zameda is dressed like the evil queen from Snow White.
Oh, yeah.
And the teen is dressed like Maleficent, and their costumes are like very accurate. Yeah. And then you have Catherine Hahn, who's dressed like the Wicked Witch of the West. So she's like green, but her costume isn't quite wicked, but isn't quite the Wizard of Oz. And it's her like, like something's going on here. There, it's not quite right. And then Lilia's character, as like, I guess Glinda is also sort of like slightly off in a way, but
which I think makes sense because, you know, Glinda and the Wicked Witch actually need each other in the end. And I think, you know,
well, in the end,
here Lilia's final act is to give Glinda to give Agatha a warning of what's coming.
Yeah,
cute.
And Patti LuPone's so good, and she's good in everything. But like, did you watch Beau Is Afraid? Probably not. No. That was Ari Aster's last movie. But she is so good in that. And if that movie had come out in the fall, she would have gotten an Oscar nomination or at least like awards attention. But it came out in like April and didn't do well in the box office because it was very weird. But she's just so good. And then I saw her in Company on Broadway, and she was just absolutely fantastic. And there was like a group number where they had to perform choreography, and you could tell that she just hated every second of it. It was like a slight step behind, and it involved like moving chairs and stuff around the stage. And the way she like picked up and sort of threw these chairs with such disdain was so entertaining.
She was like a Broadway. She was just not into it. I thought she was like a Broadway performer.
No, she is like a Broadway star, but I think like now, I mean, how old is she?
Yeah,
in her 70s. And now she, it's like she sings, and she's like a diva, and she's a very good actor. So I think she's used to, you know, sort of like these roles that are more like park and bark kind of things, and are not like, oh, you're going to have to be clearing furniture off the set and doing like quick, fast group choreography with 15 other people. But she got through it. But it was funny to watch her because you could tell that it was, she was just like, this is not why I'm here. Like, I'm here to perform Ladies Who Lunch and collect my Tony for that one scene, and I have to do these other scenes, unfortunately, as well. But
yeah. Love that.
Wait, do you think that we'll get a sequel to this? Because like, you don't, we don't get anything about the second brother. Like he's supposedly switched into a body of somebody who's drowning someplace, but we don't really ever see him. Yeah. And then also at the end, Agatha comes back as a ghost, and they sort of like walk out into the sunshine into kind of like their next adventure together.
His spirit guide now. Yeah, I think it's like definitely opened up to have a sequel. I don't think it's anything's been decided yet. I think it would be kind of a strange one because she's a ghost now. Like she sacrificed, she died. She decided to die after all, because in the end, death wanted either her or Billy. And at first she set it up so Billy was tricked into dying. But then she like, I don't know. I think it was a really nice moment where she kind of gave up murdering the witches for her own benefit. And she's like, you know, I'm done. Like, let's see if I can enjoy this next form. And so she gets the kiss of death. Ooh la la. And then appears as a wispy grayed sage. Who kind of walks Billy through the realization that he had caused this whole experience to happen. And he's trying to banish her to the afterlife. And she's like, wait, actually, I'm scared. And so that little human moment is enough for him to be like, you know what? We've both done some wrongs here, but maybe you can help me. So yeah, it's sort of like set up for a sequel in that they walk off together with a plan. But I also wouldn't be like mad if it didn't pick up, but I feel like it's doing so well. People like it so much that why wouldn't they, you know?
I mean, I feel like that there is a 0% chance that he and the twin don't show up at some point in some Marvel yeah. thing. I guess the question is like, will it be one of these movies or will they get their own sort of spinoff? Yeah. I also think that the fact that Sashir Zamata.
Oh yeah, yeah. Witch, she'll definitely like, be coming back.
She'll be coming back at some point as somebody. I'm sure if we looked up these characters online, we could like figure out what they're doing because you know, well, like, yeah, the comic books.
Billy Maximoff is like, I don't remember his name, but he's a character, and so I assume the brother is too. I don't remember if Agatha is.
Also known as Wiccan and Speed.
Oh, yeah, Wiccan.
I'm like, so he's Wiccan, and I guess the other one is Speed?
Yeah, because he's fast.
Interesting. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, and the creators of this said they had considered bringing Wanda back in the, like, finale, but they didn't want to, like, rob the story of it from itself. Like, they didn't want to distract for a little gimmicky like gotcha moment. Mm-hmm. But that does imply that she's alive and like that she was right, that she could feel her kids in the universe. But Billy's mad at her, he wasn't interested in finding her at the end of the road. So yeah, I'm sure that'll come up again. And honestly, they should just retcon the entire Doctor Strange story because I still am salty about it. But
the thing is, there's so many different like multiverses and stuff now. It's like, oh, you can just pull somebody in from one of the other ones. Yeah. You know what
it's
I mean? Like
so low stakes, yeah.
Yeah, there's nobody dead. There's no way. Because who's... Well, wait. And then Robert Downey Jr. is coming back, but now he's Captain whatever thing in the Fantastic Four. Yeah, it's like the whole thing is sort of ridiculous at this point. And, yeah. And there's a new...
So this was nice. This was nice because... It didn't care about the multiverse. We didn't have to have all these jokes about like, "Oh, this is me on planet 752." Like, you know, there was there was no police coming in being like, "Tasing you. You're not on the main timeline." Like, you know, we've gotten all the same sort of moments in everything before this. So, it was nice to have this sort of be standalone. Obviously there's magic and there's fighting with death and there's seven witch spirits after them, but it's really low stakes at the end of the day, which made it more enjoyable. And it was the perfect sort of like slow rollout show, which you didn't get to experience, but it's nice to have those shows that actually make it interesting to wonder what's coming next. And they did a good job of building this episode by episode. So the payoff wasn't a surprise. Like, it was a surprise, it was a twist, but it wasn't, like, out of left field. Like, everything leading up to it made sense with that context.
Mm-hmm.
Which was nice. And everyone did a good job. And honestly, two for two on, like, bops coming out of her shows, like, give Jack the world. Like, Down the Witch's Road is literally on repeat, even post-Halloween. Like, I'm just like... Penny's singing it now. Like, it's just so catchy and delightful. And having the origin story makes it all the sweeter, sadder. bitter.
Well, it's from the people who wrote it are the people who wrote the Frozen songs.
Yeah.
So it's like you, yeah, like Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez are, they'd be writing bops. They're,
yeah, yeah.
Because they wrote Let It Go. What else have they written? The Coco song.
Yeah.
Into the Unknown.
Agatha All Along.
Yes, I mean, Agatha All Along.
From the first one. The little TV tune.
Agatha All Along. Yeah, because I think Robert Lopez has an EGOT, if I am correct. I'm like, what does he... He has two Oscars for Let It Go and Remember Me. He has an Emmy for Agatha All Along. He has Grammys for Book of Mormon, Frozen, and Let It Go from Frozen. And then he has Tonys for Avenue Q, Book of Mormon. So
cute, good for
and
him.
And then his wife, I guess, doesn't have a Tony, but someday.
Yeah, Patti LuPone's gonna get it to her one of these shows. but no, my favorite Easter egg actually was around the song, in that in them first getting to the road, they're arguing over the lyrics and Agatha's like, no, it's my coven too. And they're like, no, it's my coven true. And they like turn to the daughter of the woman who recorded the best selling version of it. And it's like, well, what's the lyrics? And Agatha's like, fine, you guys are right. But then in the end, you realize, like, no, the actual lyrics are Coven 2, because, again, it was just a song her and her son wrote in between murdering witches. And that's really sweet, honestly.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't even catch that. Yeah. Such a fun little show. For such a fun little day.
Well, we don't have, you know, great news politically, but if you're ever down, you can watch a montage of Catherine Hahn in various historical outfits being all witchy and vindictive as she sucks the power out of these witches she tricked into coming into the woods with her, which is iconic. So,
and I know we're talking about Heretic. This upcoming week, but I do want to say I had this thought earlier today. I was like, I think that the movie that's going to win Best Picture this year is going to be Conclave. I mean, it's very good. Everybody obviously likes it, has lots of good performances, is very well made. But also I just was thinking about like the election and how Hollywood is going to want to like give some sort of response to that. Uh-huh. And I was like, I think that Conclave, which is like a movie about voting and about people like ultimately voting for a good person over a bad person, just feels like such an
like a
very sort of strong message. And I just think that it's going to resonate all the more over the next, you know, month as more people watch it. And I was like, wait, I think that this movie is going to win Best Picture.
Yeah.
So I'm saying that now.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. I feel like it hasn't made an impact yet, but maybe I can see your argument for it.
Yeah. I mean, I think like everybody in the Academy is definitely going to watch it. And also, I don't know how you could watch it and not like it. Like, it's a very enjoyable movie.
Yeah.
And I think some of the other options that are up are a little bit more polarizing. And this seems like, especially with the ranked choice ballots, will do well. Mm. But yeah.
That's
fair. Okay. I should probably get going, but this was great. And thank you for making me watch this. This was a good time.
You're welcome.
And yes, everybody who's listening, I hope that you're doing
safe,
okay.
Stay happy. Yeah.
And yeah.
Let's look out for each other. We're all we have.
Maybe move to you know, I'm like maybe move to the coast, but then I'm also like, no, actually we can't be moving to the coast because we need to win some of these middle states. So if you're in a battleground state, stay in a battleground state.
But yeah, it's community building that matters now. So love it.
Well, thank you for listening, everybody, and we'll be back next week. Bye.